Hey, good evening, everybody. Yeah, it's Friday. This is the Malloy Program. Thanks for tuning in. What do we have tonight? The usual nonsense. Sam Cedar's going to join us, all right? In about an hour. The famous Sam Cedar. Movie actor, writer, talk show host, television personality, and co-host of Ring of Fire. Whew. Can we handle all that in one program? Oh, my God. That's a lot of things. Did you hear Hillary Clinton? Was that testimony today or was it yesterday? Where is it? I think it was yesterday. Play that, Kathy, if you have it handy, please.
We're the most technologically advanced country in the world. So slowly but surely, we've been trying to take back the airwaves in Afghanistan against Taliban with the most primitive kind of communication equipment. Now, take that as one example where I don't think we were very competitive, and we have worked like crazy to change that. And then go to the most extreme where you've got a set of global networks that Al Jazeera has been the leader in that are literally changing people's minds and attitudes. And like it or hate it, it is really effective. And in fact, viewership of Al Jazeera is going up in the United States because it's real news. You may not agree with it, but you feel like you're getting real news around the clock instead of a million commercials and, you know, arguments between talking heads and the kind of stuff that we do on our news, which, you know, is not particularly informative to us, let alone foreigners.
Well, fancy that. Of course, I happen to agree with her. I happen to agree with her very much. Real news is being provided by Al Jazeera. That's right. They do provide real news, don't they? And that's the reason so many Americans went to the Internet, since Al Jazeera is very, very, very limited in this country where it concerns cable or satellite service. A lot of people went to the net to get real news. No right-wing, stupid-ass commentary, no arguments back and forth, no Glenn Beck, no Rupert Murdoch terrorist broadcast lying organization designed to destroy America. But as Hillary Clinton said that, I could feel the hairs on the back of my neck go up because it was her husband who brought this about. It was her husband who signed the Telecommunications Act of 1996 that resulted in the concentration of media ownership in this country and resulted in where we are now. In 1983, there were approximately 50 major media companies in the U.S., 50. In 1996, 10. In 2005, 6. All as a result of the Telecommunications Act of 1996. The Consolidation Act, call it whatever you want. I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary film Orwell Rolls in His Grave. Released in 2003, written and directed by Robert Kane Pappas. It covered topics including that Telecommunications Act of 1996, the concentration of media ownership, political corruption, the U.S. FCC, the controversy over the U.S. presidential election of 2000, particularly in Florida with Bush v. Gore, and the influence that the Rupert Murdoch terrorist organization, having employed a Bush cousin to assist in throwing the election. The film, Orwell Rolls in His Grave, previously aired on Free Speech TV. And according to Wikipedia, the film examines the current and past relationships between the media, the U.S. government, and corporations, analyzing the possible consequences of the concentration of media ownership. Making reference to George Orwell's novel 1984, the film argues that reality has met and in some ways exceeded Orwell's expectations about a society dominated by thought control, which is made possible by the media. According to the film, the mass media no longer report news, but manage it, deciding what makes the headlines and what is conveniently ignored, thus ultimately defining the framework upon which most other issues are discussed by society. The documentary is a critical examination of the so-called Fourth Estate. Boy, does that seem like an ancient term. Used to be the bastion of American democracy. Asked whether America has entered an Orwellian world of doublespeak, where outright lies can pass for the truth. Oh, for Christ's sake, just watch Fox News one day. The director, Robert Kane Pappas, explores what the media doesn't like to talk about itself. Orwell rolls in his grave. So Hillary Clinton was right on the money. But I just wish somebody, wherever she was testifying, I have no idea. I really don't care a rat's ass about Hillary Clinton. I do not. She is a warmonger. She is as much of a fascist as anybody in the Republican Party. She is a corporatist. She is doing her part to destroy representative government in this country. But there she was, talking about something that her husband brought about. Now, is she responsible for her husband's actions? No, not at all. But shouldn't Mrs. Clinton have at least addressed the reality of why Al Jazeera presents news, for example, and American television networks and companies present garbage? Remember, Mrs. Clinton, the primary directive of television is to make us forget. It has been argued that the forced access provisions of that 1996 Act have had little economic value. And the primary sustainable competitive forces in phone and related non-radio telecommunications are the wireline telephone companies, the cable companies, and the wireless companies. Now, the Act, at the time it was signed, just like when NAFTA was signed into law by Bill Clinton, the Telecommunications Act was claimed to foster competition. Oh, yeah. It's going to bring about competition. In reality, it continued the industry consolidation, reducing, like I mentioned, the number of major media companies from around 50 in 1983 to 6 in 2005. An FCC study found that the act led to a drastic decline in the number of radio station owners, even as the actual number of commercial stations in the United States increased. Ah, Jesus. So, you know, I'm going about my business today, and I hear that bit of sound. You talk about a head snapper. But she's absolutely right. Couldn't be more correct. This hour is sponsored by Philip Holbrook, who writes, "Keep up the vital work." Thank you, Philip.
The unobtrusive tones on the news tonight. And mama said, why don't the newscasters cry when they read about people who die? At least they could be decent enough to put just a tear in their eyes. But mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see. It's So baby, close your eyes to the lullabies on the news.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Sam Cedar coming up in about 45 minutes. John Boehner was speaking last week before a gathering of religious broadcasters in Nashville, Tennessee. There's a surprise. He said, the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, said that freedom and free expression are under attack from regulators who have no firsthand experience in the broadcast industry. Boehner is pledging to thwart net neutrality regulations and any effort to reinstate the Fairness Doctrine. In a speech delivered to the National Religious Broadcasters, Boehner targeted the FCC and certain unnamed members of Congress for their efforts to reinstate some form of the Fairness Doctrine. This is what he said, quote, "Right now, freedom and free expression are under attack by a power structure in Washington populated with regulators who have never set foot inside a radio station or a television studio." End quote. Regulators? It's under attack in Washington? See, this is why, I mean, every time this rat bastard or any Republican rat bastard opens his or her mouth, what I've said is made even more valid. They cannot do anything but lie. They are habitual liars. This is what he also said. He said the Fairness Doctrine was a censorship scheme from the 1940s. A censorship scheme from the 1940s. The Fairness Doctrine was a policy of the FCC introduced in 1949 that required those who held a broadcast license to both present controversial issues of public importance. That's, they had to present issues so that people could think, could discuss, and to do so in a manner that was honest, equitable, and balanced. The Fairness Doctrine. The Fairness Doctrine. Two aspects. The holders of broadcast licenses had to present controversial issues of public importance, A. B, do so in a manner that was honest, equitable, and balanced. And what does John Boehner call that? He calls that the censorship scheme from the 1940s. Censorship. It's a censorship scheme. You know, those people back there wanted issues of public importance put out there in an honest, equitable, and balanced way. That's a censorship scheme. That's a censorship scheme. My God. Now, the problem is a lot of people confuse the Fairness Doctrine with the equal time rule. The Fairness Doctrine deals with discussion of controversial issues. The equal time rule deals only with political candidates. But in 1949, back in the bad old days, right, when there was a lot of things wrong with this country, but there were a few things still being done correctly, like making sure that somebody who held a public license to broadcast, a license worth billions, there's an old story in the radio business, a broadcast license is a license to print money. And the regulators knew that. So they decided in 1949, after about 25 years of outrageously one-sided crap usually coming from the right wing, even then, that if you wanted a broadcast license, you better treat it with respect, respect to the people that granted it to you. That would be the public. Controversial issues of public importance had to be presented. And that presentation had to be honest, equitable, and balanced. Son of a bitch. Yeah, that really is, Boner. You're absolutely right. That is a censorship scheme from the 1940s. You are right, Orange Man. You are so right, you goddamn drunk. It's just unbelievable. Before he addressed the religious broadcasters, I can see him in his hotel room or his motel room or his trailer, ensconced with his girlfriend, swilling down his, what is he like? Cabernet. What does he drink? He drinks, what's another red wine that he drinks? Merlot. He's a Merlot freak. So I can just see him sitting in his room with his girlfriend. Oh, I'll tell you what, honey, I got to go dress these religious freaks. Let me see here. Let me see. Pour me another glass, will you? Do I look orange enough? Oh, good. Let me think here. Let me think. Oh, I know. Religious broadcasters. Yeah. I'll tell them that it was a censorship scheme. You know, the fairness doctrine. No, not that one. The other one. The one where things had to be presented equitably and in balance. Yeah. That'll do it. Jesus God.
Mr. Nice Guy. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Sam Cedar joins us in about half an hour. This hour is sponsored by Philip Holbrook, whose message is simply keep up the vital work. Thank you, Philip. James in Seattle. Right, so I'm sure many were gratified to hear my favorite neocon fascist Hillary Clinton go on about how Al Jazeera is, quote, winning the information war, end quote, in actually giving viewers real content as opposed to the Clintons' sponsored propaganda so many of us are subjected to today. Of course, I'm referring to the Clinton administration's Telecommunications Act of 1996, culminating in the final consolidation of the American, already heavily controlled media. One of the two people considered the point man in the passage of that bill, Jim Kohlenberger, is back again at the Obama administration as chief of staff in the White House Office of Science and Technology. The other, Larry Irving, went into business sometime back with Bush administration stooge Bruce Melman. A recent Hillary appointment, Mark Grossman, a former Bush neocon appointee, was the point man in undercovering Valerie Plame's covert identity and then spreading that information to Richard Armitage, Ari Fleischer, and Libby to be made public. It is gratifying to see the unions finally, if only partially, withdraw their collective heads from their butts and take notice of the assault against them. Oh, I see. This is a different topic. James had a very quick segue there. Back some years ago, he writes, when I was doing a short live stint as a union organizer, I remember standing in front of PATCO, arguing and pleading with them not to support Reagan in his first run for the presidency. I warned them they would be sorry, but even I didn't realize how soon that was to be. Unfortunately, various union spokesmen are repeating that same tired refrain. Call this senator and that representative and that government agency and all those wackadoodles. Over the past 20 to 30 years, I've been pleading and pleading with people about ignoring all those thousand points of confusion. Ask any American today if they know who owns the controlling share of ExxonMobil, BP, JP Morgan Chase, Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, Baxter Pharmaceuticals, etc., 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 and they will give you an annoyed, stupefied look. Way back in the 1950s, journalist and sociologist Ferdinand Lundberg wrote a book titled The Treason of the People, explaining that America was run by an oligarchy. Another book written in the 60s titled The Rich and the Super Rich fully explained the way the super rich dynasties were hiding their money and would disappear from the public in the next generation. These are pretty much the only two books necessary to read today. Too late. We are now in the final 2 years of their endgame. Too many have been paying attention to those thousand points of confusion, pro-choice, religious freedom, those many individual attacks on workers, unions, etc., and ignored who is the power behind the throne. Back in 2003 or 2004, the full definition of globalization finally became apparent to me. It is when one has had their past 22 jobs offshored, ends up on the street due to lack of work, and must sleep outdoors on cold winter nights because the shelter is full, occupied to over half by undocumented workers from Asia, Africa, and the Americas. Now that's globalization. James in Seattle. Ow! Lots of subject matter there, James, any one of which could keep us busy all night, right? Ohio. This is from Larry. Regarding Ohio's restrictions on collective bargaining, Larry writes, as a union tradesman and still active union member since 1975 here in Oregon, it has been disheartening to watch the right-wing attack on the public employee unions in Ohio, Wisconsin, New Jersey, Florida, Maine, etc. Since 1967, when organized labor was at the height of membership at roughly 28% of the workforce, and ever since then, union membership has been on the decline. It is also no coincidence that wages since then have also declined. This is the fact we know now. When union membership declines, so do worker wages. But yet the average American worker doesn't seem to understand that these two statistics, union membership and workers' wages, parallel each other. When we weaken the bargaining rights of unions, we affect and hurt all American workers, whether they are union or not. Now, I know, Larry writes, that of the roughly 350,000 public employee workers that are still somewhat union in Ohio, there surely must be a lot who are Republican. And I would love to hear how those folks feel today, now that Governor Kasich has stripped them of their collective bargaining rights. I wonder how many Republican public employee workers in Ohio are mad as hell today. Think maybe 50,000, 100,000? Maybe 150,000 are Republicans, huh? I wish the lamestream media would do a better job of seeking out Republicans that are public workers in Ohio, Wisconsin, Maine, New Jersey, Florida, etc., and start interviewing these people and asking them if they approve of doing away with collective bargaining and how upset they are at Kasich, Walker, Christie, etc. You know, nobody is doing this kind of news reporting, and I'd really like to know why the hell they aren't. Kasich has turned the clock back 50 years in Ohio for teachers, university professors, firefighters, police officers, and other public employees. If this isn't a wake-up call, I don't know what is then. Look out for the so-called right-to-work legislation to follow soon also. Look at how well the right-wing propaganda machine sells misinformation. We, the people, believe their lies. Some of us, that is. Larry in Oregon. Yeah, I don't understand. I realize they had 8,500 people turn out the statehouse in Columbus, Ohio, at one point this week. But these demonstrations are not being fed by a constant stream of people coming in. The workers in Wisconsin have struggled, 2 weeks? Jesus Christ, it didn't take that long to bring down the government of Egypt. How many people live in Wisconsin? Where in the hell are the rest of you? It's going to happen here in Georgia, too. I'll be out there. But I don't live in a state that is known for liberal or progressive policies. I live in goddamn Georgia, the buckle of the Bible Belt, where Republicans only learned to walk upright about two generations ago. That's where I live. I am so pleased to see the people in Wisconsin who said no, hell no, while this goddamn little tyrant of a governor with his backing by the billionaires just continues to shove his middle finger in the working man and woman's face over and over again. So where are the rest of you Wisconsinites? These several thousand people, I know it swelled to 80,000 at one point, 100,000. But why isn't the state capitol in Wisconsin surrounded so that nobody gets in or out until this nonsense stops? Did you see the video of Nick Milroy, a representative, a Democrat, who showed up at the state capitol in Madison today to get his goddamn clothing out of his office? And he was tackled and beaten by cops. Did you see it? Did you see it? And he's shouting, I'm a legislator. You can thank you people in Wisconsin who voted for Walker. Shame on you. Shame on you until hell freezes over. This is what you brought. You are assisting in the advent of fascism in this country. Every single one of you who voted for Walker, every single one of you, shame on you. Shame on you. In Wisconsin, for Christ's sake, Wisconsin voted for a fascist. Astonishing. So that's what your governor has brought you. Democratic legislators elected to public office showing up to get his clothing and being thrown to the ground by the goddamn Gestapo. What do you call cops that act like asses like that? What do you call them? The man is an elected representative. Let's take a break. Play some music. Jesus Christ, I got to stop screaming. If you can bring some music up, I'd appreciate it. I am not in a very good mood tonight at all. I'm so sick of this right-wing garbage.
And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard rain is gonna fall. Oh, what did you?
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
I would not run from the Holocaust. I would not run from the bomb. I'd welcome the chance to meet my maker.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Philip Holbrook. This message is simply keep up the vital work. Thank you, Philip. We appreciate it very much. Got an email from John in Northville, Michigan, who signs off by saying he's been a big fan from the days on UAW radio. Oh, my God, that was a different lifetime. John writes, Mike, I have to tell you what you did to me this morning. I'm a 72-year-old retired grandfather with four grandkids living with me and my wife. They are 15, 14, 13, and 9 years old. It's my job every school day to get the kids up and off to school. I'm a Malloy Show podcast subscriber, and I listen to you each morning between getting the kids off. This morning, after getting the high school and middle school kids off to school, I had about an hour before getting our 9-year-old up for elementary school. This gives me some quiet time to listen to my favorite progressive talk show. But when you told us the story of the murdered children in Afghanistan, it really hit home. You cannot see the tears on the internet. I got the 9-year-old up and took him to school. He was almost late because I couldn't stop hugging him. I'm so tired of these stories of what is being done in our name. Will my grandkids ever be welcome in any other country in the world? I've been a lifelong Democrat who's very proud to say that my first vote was for JFK, and I have voted in most elections since. But I'm not sure I can ever vote again. I'm so disappointed in President Obama. One more dead person in Afghanistan will be one too many. It has to stop. Mike, I had to tell you my story. Keep up the good work. Thank you. John, and his last name in Northville, Michigan. Yeah, I know exactly the feeling. I think you have to be, and I'm not minimizing anybody's dedication to their children, no matter how old the parents are. But I swear, having been a parent in my 20s, 30s, 40s, and now my 60s, I have to tell you that the stories that used to blow right by me, the stories that would catch my attention, and for a moment, I would feel kind of a manufactured sadness. You know, 9 children dead, picking up firewood in Afghanistan, blown to pieces, their heads and arms and legs blown off by the U.S. military presence. Okay, it says NATO military presence, but give me a break, all right? You know, if I would have seen that story 20 years ago, and I did see stories like that 20 years ago and 40 years ago, I would feel a moment of what now feels like manufactured compassion. Like, oh, God, that's a terrible story. I didn't feel like a visceral feeling of terror, which is what terrible means, doesn't it? It was passing. Ever since I brought that up earlier this week, it's stuck in my head. When you get to a certain age and you have little kids around you, whether they're your own children or your grandchildren or your nieces and nephews, it doesn't really make any difference. What your relationship to them is, if they are your family members and you look at them and if you do things with them that are vital, like John here, getting them up in the morning. You know, Kathy and I get up in the morning. She takes Molly to school, but before she does that, I fix Molly's breakfast. And like John gets, he's got these grandkids living with him for whatever reason is beside the point. He is exposed to these kids. So am I. So are a lot of people. And when you have that exposure at a certain age, I swear this is true. When you read something or hear something like 9 children blown to pieces, the youngest of whom was 9, when you read that now at a certain age, it just stops you in your tracks. I mean, it's hard to function. It's hard to think beyond those images. Jesus, God. I mean, and then when you realize that your country is doing that, your leadership is ordering it, your fellow Americans are pulling the goddamn triggers, your legislators are passing the appropriations bills to keep this goddamn horror going. What do you do with that? It almost drives me insane. I don't know what the hell to do. Do you avoid those stories? You know, I've told Kathy many times over the past couple, 3 years, I can't do this job anymore. I cannot do it. It's not fun. There's nothing in this job that is fun or pleasurable. It just seems like a constant reading and regurgitation of horror stories. Whether it's some goddamn filthy governor in this country eliminating collective bargaining, or a decision made someplace to murder children, to invade countries, to engage in willful acts of violating somebody else's country. When does it stop? When does it stop? It doesn't stop, does it? We're ready to take a break, and when we come back, Sam Cedar will be here. Thanks to Philip Holbrook for sponsoring this past hour. Where are you going to be on March 19th? I'm going to be in Washington, D.C., involved in an anti-war demonstration. Where are you going to be? You can go to answercoalition.org, answercoalition.org, and find out where there's an anti-war demonstration that you can participate in if you're so inclined. See you in a few minutes. I'm Mike Malloy. Leah Roshan, no message, just a sponsorship. Thank you, Leah. Well, as promised, Sam Cedar joins us from upstate New York. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Oh my God, you sound like you're right next to me.
I am in the next room.
Oh, there you are. I'll be damned. how you doing? Good to hear from you. Right. Kathy says, so where were we? That's a very oblique reference to our days at Air America. You know, like
exactly.
We were badly interrupted. How you been doing?
I've been doing great. I wanted to thank you for having you. I've been listening to you. We've been having a one-way conversation, but, I've been doing Ring of Fire Radio with Mike Papantonio and Bobby Kennedy on the weekends.
Right.
And daily, I relaunched the Majority Report as a streaming show online and podcast. We just started it up about 3 or 4 months ago.
I've been going to your website. This MSNBC work, when are they going to hire you?
That's a great question. I don't think that's going to happen for a while.
Yeah.
But, I ended up filling in for Olbermann in what ended up being, his last month there.
Right.
I did about a week in that last month, and, I don't have the same relationship, with the other primetime shows. I'll do, Radigan's show occasionally, but, frankly, You know, it would be nice to, they pay you pretty well over there is my guess, but, I enjoy doing radio and.
Yeah, you don't have to get dressed and you don't have to shave.
Exactly.
Because when I saw you all those nights that were you on MSNBC, I thought, Jesus God, he looks so neat and clean. I mean,
right, you've never seen me dressed.
Never.
No. The beauty is those ties and those sport jackets are completely tax deductible because I've never worn them except for work.
Right, just like you know Hal Sparks. We spent a week with Hal on that cruise, and I don't think he ever came out of blue jeans and a black leather jacket and a black T-shirt, which is my favorite mode of dress too. But even the nights where we're supposed to dress up in a tux for dinner on board this ship, you know, Hal would show up with a black leather jacket and a T-shirt and black jeans. And you're the same way, you know. When I saw if I saw Hal Sparks in a coat and tie, I wouldn't recognize him. And
right, it's either a funeral or there's somebody paying me some money.
That's right. How's the Ring of Fire program going for you?
Well, you know, I love it. I mean, you know, I've always been a big fan of Pap Antonio's and Bobby Kennedy's. I mean, you know, I grew up in Massachusetts. Bobby doesn't remember this, obviously, but 20 years ago, maybe more now, I guess about 24, I was working at a coffee shop in Cambridge, and I served Bobby coffee. And, you know, that was a huge deal for me at that time.
Sure.
And the idea that I can, you know, every weekend talk to him about political issues is fantastic. I mean, Pap is one of the boldest guys.
Hey, Sam, yeah. You're breaking up real bad. We're getting every other word. I mean, literally every other word. What to do here?
Want me to try and call you back?
Are you on Skype?
No, but I can hop on Skype and try it.
All right. Let's wait a second. You're coming through loud and clear now, but I'll tell you what. During the break, coming up here in about 4 minutes, just try calling us back.
Okay.
We'll see if you get a better line. I want to get with you to this insane situation that has developed in New Jersey, Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan's next, these punitive laws that are being passed against public workers, against unions. It's strictly, we know what it is. I mean, it has nothing to do with balancing anybody's anything. But is this not astonishing? Did you ever think you'd live to see this?
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Actually, I mean, I'll tell you something. Almost a year ago now, Janine Garofalo and I went and did a comedy show for some idea that happened. And
Sam,
break it up?
Yeah, the breakup is really bad, and we're missing what you're saying. And I've got a lot of people who have just tuned in tonight specifically to hear you. Let's just hang up and call back in. All right?
Okay.
Let's just do it right now because I don't want to miss what he's saying. Beep, bop, 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 beep, bop, bop. That's what it sounded like, right? Bop, 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 beep, bop. See, I never do guess. Once in a blue moon. And then when I do, it was somebody that I want to have on, right? And it breaks up like crazy. That's just not fair. It's just not fair. It's not right. It's not, I don't know. All right, Sam, we're going to try it again?
Yeah, am I sounding better?
Yeah, that sounds a little, no breakup now. All right, back to the labor thing.
So, I was saying that Janine Garofalo and I did a comedy show that was supposed to be like a comedy political night, and Grover Norquist was on the panel. And this is like about a year ago almost, and aside from being worried that Janine would jump across the stage and attempt to wring his neck, I was trying to keep it light, and I was, trying to be jokey, And this guy starts in immediately as if we are on some type of national CNN show talking about government workers and government unions. Mm-hmm. And I said at one point, I said, you know, we're not on television here. You can actually talk like a human being. And he would keep repeating this refrain. And, you know, I listen to right-wing talk radio. They have been pushing and demonizing public government workers for years now. But really, in the past 12 to 15 months, they were anticipating having the opportunity to maybe come in and do this type of damage because they wanted to. They've successfully, essentially, destroyed unions in the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the last vestige of unions, and they want to attack it. And so the nakedness of it and the, you know, I'm never surprised by the right wing's capacity to overreach. And this crew of Tea Partiers is so deluded that their capacity to overreach is that much greater.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll tell you something. The greatest thing that came out of that, you remember that Michelle Bachmann post State of the Union address she gave where
right,
she was
right.
looking at the wrong camera?
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, was the perfect metaphor
yes.
for the fact that you cannot speak to the Tea Party without looking insane to the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what Scott Walker, you know, is about. These people want to destroy unions because they see it as the last vestige of workers to have any type of political or economic power. And this is on their agenda, and they were, you know, using the supposed budget shortfalls and the recession as sort of a shock doctrine and attempting to sneak this provision in, which had nothing to do with reducing deficits. And, you know, particularly in Wisconsin's case, you have the union already conceding to any type of cut.
Sam, so, let me put you on hold. We got to do a break here. Let me put you on hold. We'll come back. I want to talk about the possible blowback from what you're talking about, overreach, the fact that maybe the American people are waking up to the fact that the Republican Party is out to destroy anything they can get their hands on. We're talking with Sam Seder. Stay with us. We'll continue the conversation in a minute. I'm Mike Malloy.
Ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
Hour. We're talking with Sam Seder of Ring of Fire, MSNBC, Air America, Jesus, movies, commercials, books. God, you make me feel like a failure.
No, I will come. I will come to your house. I will rake your backyard of leaves. I will do your gardening. Whatever it takes.
All right. This labor situation, these governors, Kasich, you know, I was on
right.
Fox about, this was before Molly was born, I think. So we're talking about 7, 8 years ago. I was on Fox with Kasich and some other freak. And I knew at the time, this is back when he had just left the House. He did a program on Fox called, From the Heartland or The Heartland. It was a
right.
Saturday show. And that's the only time I ever got up and walked off camera. They cut my mic real quick because I was using the F word in the studio over and over again. I hate this guy. But when you look at Walker and Kasich and Chris Christie, who does this Christie think he is? I mean, who are these people, Sam?
Well, I'll tell you something. First off, Chris Christie is so beloved by the corporate media, it makes my stomach turn. And I cannot wait for the day that this guy announces that he's going to run for president. And then the next day that I cannot wait for is the day after the New Hampshire primary, where he loses as badly as Rudy Giuliani does
really?
And has to go back to New Jersey in shame. But and Scott Walker, I don't know if this guy lasts out his term, he's going to be very fortunate. He's not going to get reelected again. I mean, one of the things that this has done it's very interesting. You know, on the Majority Report during the day, I've spoken to a lot of people who have been out in Wisconsin. You remember my old producer, Josh, actually lives 100 feet from where the protests were.
Wow.
His apartment out there. He's going to school out there, and I've talked to a lot of reporters. And one of the things that I keep hearing over and over again is that what's happening in Wisconsin is happening almost completely divorced from the National Democratic Party. This is a real groundswell involving labor and students and just the workers and the local Democratic Party. And we're starting to see this in Ohio. We're seeing this big in Wisconsin. We're starting to see this in Indiana. And I think this has this is going to have some serious implications in terms of like 2012, and in terms of, more importantly, in terms of who's controlling these states. Never mind on a national level, but on a local level. And hopefully, this will bubble up to Washington, where there's this idiocy about treating the deficit as if it's a that's the aspect of the house that's on fire, as opposed to the 8.99% unemployment that is reported anyways, which is the big problem in this country.
Right. You know, you just made a real obvious but important point, and I wonder how many people are paying attention to this. This refusal to remain quiet and be good little proles that is on display in Wisconsin is totally devoid, as far as I know, Sam, totally devoid of any real enthusiastic leadership from the Democratic Party leadership. Have you noticed that?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think that's necessarily the case on the ground in Wisconsin in terms of the local state party.
Right.
But in terms of national Democrats,
right.
Nothing. Sherrod Brown said a thing or two. Al Franken said a thing or two. But, you know, those walk-in shoes that Obama had talked about, he spent them down in Florida with Jeb Bush talking about how we can fire teachers.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's part of this whole Obama dynamic that has driven me right near the edge of the cliff. I knew before the election, as you did, as most people who checked his record, his voting record, as slim as it was, knew that he was no liberal. And the way the media treated him as if he were a liberal, which he was not. He's a very moving speaker, but his policies have just, I don't know, man, it's just about driving me crazy.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, I was one of those people who sort of felt like, you know, there's a chance, you know, listen, we didn't really have a, come February of 2008, there was really no liberals in the race at that point.
Right.
I thought there was a chance this guy may have a good upside. Worst case scenario, he's going to be a centrist and a corporatist. And sadly, that's what we ended up getting.
Mm-hmm.
In the instance of Wisconsin, they don't need him. I mean, I don't think that's not why he's involved. I don't think he's thinking this is the best strategy for Wisconsin. I think he's thinking this is the best strategy for me. And I also think to a certain extent that he actually looks around at the corporatists that surround him, at these Ivy Leaguers who essentially drove the economy into a ditch and, we'll do it again, frankly, through deregulation. I think he really looks at them and thinks that they belong where they are. And
break time, Sam. Break time. Try to hold the thought, because I want to pick this up when we come back. All right?
Okay.
Let me push
you
on hold. We're talking with Sam Cedar, the relatively new co-host of Ring of Fire. Check your local listings, as they say. And you can see Sam periodically on MSNBC as he fills in and makes the regular host look inadequate or something. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
And all is known, and
radio done right from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. We're talking with Sam Seder. You can hear Sam anytime you want to. Go to majority.fm. Majority.fm. All right, where were we before the break, Sam? I'm sorry.
Well, I think one of the things that's become clear about Obama is that he is surrounded by these so-called masters of the universe, and mm-hmm. he believes that they belong there. Despite the fact that all the evidence to the contrary, this guy is a corporatist. And, I know that we're living in an era where we have essentially a plutocracy, where we have these billionaires and millionaires who are untethered to the fate of the middle class in this country, because they may make just as much money or make more money, with their factories in Dubai or something, mm-hmm. or in Bombay. But that really seems to be the situation, is that, more than ever, we cannot rely on the classic liberal Democrat, supposed liberal Democrat, essentially fight on behalf of the 90% of this country that don't control the 70% of the wealth.
There has to be, though. I mean, the country. Our system of self-government, anything that makes America America, in the plus column. There's an awful lot in the minus column, but that cannot be completely dead. It cannot be a corpse yet. It's heading that way, and if that is true, then there has to be Democratic Party leaders someplace. And if not, okay. I've been saying over and over again that it's time to abandon the Democratic Party altogether in terms of party politics and look for that individual, knowing full well that anyone who operates outside the party system in this country has an ice cube's chance in hell right. of succeeding. And yet, this resurgence of liberal democracy has got to begin someplace. It's got to start somewhere. And unless it is dead, unless it is in fact a corpse, which it may well be.
Well, I am hopeful, but mostly because I have a choice to be hopeful or not hopeful, and so I'm hopeful. I don't have a strong rational argument as to why to be hopeful, but I'm also fairly convinced that given the right type of pressure, the right amount of pressure, we can affect Obama's behavior. And, I am very heartened by what's going on in Wisconsin. And, yesterday, I don't know if you talked about this, but a guy named Timothy DeChristopher was found guilty. He's an environmental activist. He went into a Utah oil and gas leasing auction, mm-hmm. where they're auctioning off, basically, the American government is essentially auctioning off our property to oil and gas companies. And he picked up a paddle and started to bid. And he won some leases, and because he wasn't one of these oil companies, he was essentially arrested and convicted of interfering with one of these auctions. And I spoke to Bill McKibben, who I'm sure you know, one of the top environmental writers in the country, and right. he basically was talking today that he thinks that we're going to see more of this direct type of activism, where he says the policies that have been followed by the institutional and the environmental groups over the past years, they may have been wise decisions to follow, to try and get climate change legislation through the normal processes, but it failed, and now we are left with fighting what's going on in this country with a certain amount of direct action. Mm-hmm. Obviously nonviolent, but stuff that may get people thrown in jail, like civil disobedience does, and going after the big money, like the Chamber of Commerce, like the Koch brothers, and making it very uncomfortable for these people to wage the war they're waging on the 80 or 90% of Americans who do not control the vast majority of wealth in this country.
Yeah, I have gone back and revisited Mario Savio and the free speech movement from way back in the early 60s, and I agree that the time is here for direct action. And like you talk about, or like you just mentioned, civil disobedience, yeah, it has its consequences, but you have to be willing to take the consequences. You have to be willing to get involved in civil disobedience because nothing else seems to work. I'm sure you're familiar with this, and everybody who listens to this program is familiar with it because I've said it a couple of times this week, but I want to do it one more time. This Mario Savio, December 2nd, 1964, Sam, this is the quote. This is on the steps of Sproul Hall at University of California, Berkeley. Here's what he said. There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all. Now, that obviously is where I believe they were based in L.A., Rage Against the Machine. That's where the name came from. But that quote from 64, for God's sake. And I the more I revisit that and go back in the Wayback Machine to the so-called free speech movement that was bubbling out in California all those years ago, the more I'm convinced that working within the system doesn't work anymore. Martin Luther King Jr. knew this. Gandhi knew this. Thoreau knew this. Pick a name. And if you cannot work within the system and the system has become so oppressive, then you have to go outside the system. And there has to be resistance, hopefully passive. Although Savio seems to think that passive resistance or passive cooperation was not
right,
recommended, but resistance. And I think you're right. I think this. Did you see that video today of the guy? What's his name? Nick Milroy, the representative, Democrat in Wisconsin, who was tackled by the cops.
When
he tried to go back and get his car. This is what Walker has given the United States. Jesus Christ! I mean, this is like Gestapo. I don't know what it is. I've never seen anything like it.
It's like having a palace guard, frankly, is what it's like. And but I would tell you, you know, you're talking about Mario Savio. I would check out that YouTube of Christopher when he was walked out of that court yesterday. I guess it was yesterday, Thursday afternoon. Mm-hmm. Timothy DeChristopher, and he gave a speech about 3.5 minutes, basically saying something very, very similar. And mm-hmm. And when we see this type of stuff out of, out of Walker's office where, look, this whole thing started with him saying that we're going to destroy unions. And if you got a problem with it, we're going to call out the National Guard. I mean, you know,
the
one saving grace, I mean, the one thing that we should all be thankful for is that this Governor Walker is such an idiot because he doesn't have the good sense to not make that type of pronouncement. But these guys got to feel their oats so much and strut around about it that they're basically, they have awoken the sensibilities of people who have had some vague notion that there's something going on that's absolutely wrong. And this Governor Walker basically took a bullhorn and yelled it in their ear.
Right.
And he has woken them up. And frankly, I when this whole thing is over, I think somebody should send him a nice bouquet of flowers because not only are the Democrats going to take over Wisconsin in 2012, but I think this is going to affect Ohio, and I think it's going to spread across the country. And I think I certainly hope that this is the beginning, the seeds of a new movement that starts from the ground up where it really needs to happen.
Well, I agree. I hope that is the ultimate outcome. That's a little bit, lemonade out of lemons, but I'm in perfect agreement with you. Walker may have been the catalyst for people to realize, you know, before the midterm elections, when it looked like there was going to be this tsunami, I believe the word was, of Republicans, my suggestion was let it happen. Go ahead. Let people see what governance, state or federal, under Republicans really looks like. And that if they had a chance to see it, to see these half-wits, and they are half-wits, Sam, to see them at work, if there was a chance to see them at work, then maybe the people would wake up and say no, no, no. Sam, let me put you on hold. We got to take another break. We'll come right back, all right? We're talking with Sam Cedar. You can check out his program online, majority.fm. Or, hell, just look around any place. He'll show up on television, radio, movies, signing books. He and Hartman just make me so jealous. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Truth Seekers, here's the Truth Speaker, Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, and this hour has been sponsored by Leah Roshan. Thank you, Leah. No message, just a sponsorship. We're talking with Sam Cedar. You can hear him at majority.fm. Also Ring of Fire, which he now co-hosts along with Mike Papantonio and Bobby Kennedy Jr. I'm just looking at the Tim DeChristopher thing online. It's in Deseret News here, Sam. He is facing 10 years in prison.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking that this guy is facing 10 years in prison for interfering with an auction. But the people who walked away with billions of dollars in hedge fund money because they wanted to promote the sales of fraudulent mortgages so they could put more money into their pockets and destroyed our economy. There's not even investigations on these people.
And this is where the Obama administration and Eric Holder have, to me, been such incredible disappointments, at least in that. There's so many things, but...
Well, I got to tell you, what's really more disturbing to me, I mean, that is extremely disturbing to me, but when, you know, I'm sure you've talked about it, when you hear these stories that they're stripping Bradley Manning naked, that's where it really is just really just beyond the pale. Here's a guy who's supposedly a constitutional law professor, and he has continued the Bush civil liberties regime, and maybe gotten worse in some regard.
Uh-huh.
And it's stunning. It's just stunning. I mean, there's really no words for it. I literally, you know, I could express myself better on my podcast because I can swear. But I honestly don't know. I don't know how to respond to the story that this guy's been stripped naked for two nights in a row now.
I know.
Where's Linda English? When are they going to bring this guy? Is this the American government's way of showing that, hey, we can torture white people too? It's not, you know, some argument that we're not biased against Muslims. I mean, this is it's stunning to me. And
well, the inclusion of 22 additional charges, one of which carries the death penalty. I mean, this is madness. What did he do?
I mean, look, I think it's perfectly. I think he probably. I mean, we don't know because he hasn't been tried, really,
right,
of what he did. But if he did, you know, he signs a document that says I'm going to keep certain things secret. If he doesn't keep them secret, then I think that the guy has broken the law. But to say that he has aided the enemy, exactly who is the enemy in this instance,
right,
and how has he helped them?
Exactly.
I mean, what advantage do they have? I mean, many of the documents that he's released have been credited with basically helping the people in Tunisia, starting the Egyptian revolt. I mean, this is it's madness.
It's what? Sam?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, there you are. There you are. Some of the stuff that was released, the New York Times still quotes stuff where it concerns Libya, inside stuff about Libya that is obviously helping the Obama administration. But that is not acknowledged. I've got another quote for you. Somebody sent this to me. A woman sent this to me. It's a quote from 1984, and this dovetails perfectly, the Orwell book, and this dovetails perfectly with what's going on with Bradley Manning. Very quick. Quote, how does one man assert his power over another, Winston? Winston thought, by making him suffer, he said. Exactly. By making him suffer. Obedience is not enough. Now, you know who was talking there. It was O'Brien when he was torturing and brainwashing Winston Smith. But, I mean, that quote, Sam, Jesus, God, could anything be more appropriate to what is happening to Bradley Manning? By making him suffer. How does one man assert his power over another? By making him suffer. Obedience is not enough. Jesus Christ, sometimes I wonder where we're living. You know, it's driving me crazy. Help me, please.
I wish I could. Like I said, you know, I spent, 90% of what I had to say about this, today was just an expletive. Because
yeah.
I just don't know, you know, and the idea is what's really disturbing on another level is that if we knew this information, if this story of Bradley Manning happened under the Bush administration, every single Democrat and liberal would be screaming to high heaven about this. And the idea that the notion that it's okay for our government to take a prisoner who has not been charged in nearly 2 years, going on certainly over a year at this point, take a prisoner like this who's not been, not been tried, and strip him down naked from his underwear, keeping him in solitary confinement, keeping him on suicide watch, despite the fact that every psychiatrist in Quantico has said that's not appropriate, attempting to break him down psychologically, the idea that this could happen and no one seems to care is almost more depressing than our government even doing it.
Remember what they did to Jose Padilla, or Padilla, as his family said he wanted to be called. They broke him into a million pieces before they finally disposed of him. And Bradley Manning, Sam, I've got food in my refrigerator older than Bradley Manning. What is this kid, 22? How long can he hold on? Hey, listen, oh, my God, we're out of time. Hey, good talking to you.
It was a blast.
I do appreciate your taking time out to get on the program here. Majority.fm, Sam Cedar. And, Sam, let's do it again. We haven't talked for a while. Let's do this again, okay?
Thanks, Mike. It was a blast.
All right, Sam. Take care. Take care, friend. Take care. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. Go to Sam Cedar's website and listen, damn it. You get to hear the F word if you go to Sam's website, majority.fm. Stay with us. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
7 past the hour. Sam has right idea, internet program, like Bob Kincaid does. You can say anything you want. Prairie 2 writes about Madison. Madison is a relatively small town of about 250,000, including the suburbs. Estimates are at least 500,000 unique individuals have participated at least one day in the protests. It's still winter in Wisconsin, bitter cold, many of the days with high winds. Polling indicates 1.2 million people will sign a recall petition out of 2 million voters to get this rat bastard out of office. That would be good. This hour is sponsored by Mary Madden. Mary Madden. No message. Just sponsorship. Thank you, Mary. Very much. Thank you. All right. We're going to take some phone calls this hour. And also at the bottom of the hour, podcast trivia, where you can win 1 year's subscription to Molloy Program podcast downloads, commercial free. The number here is 877-996-2556. If you'd like to try to get on the program, come on. And podcast trivia at the bottom of the hour. Mary Madden sponsors this hour. I think I said that, but that's right. And one more time for right now, majority.fm is Sam Cedar's location on the web for his program, majority.fm. I know I should be focusing on more important stuff, but I've got to go here. I've got to go here. This is from Pensito, P-E-N-S-I-T-O, PensitoReview.com. John Ponder writing there. He writes, on day three of Mike Huckabee's Lollapalooza tour this week, in an interview with Hate Group radio host Brian Fisher, Huckabee said this. At age 18, well, this is a, let me preface what he said. At age 18, Huckabee's son David was fired by the Boy Scouts as a camp counselor after he and another counselor captured a stray dog, hanged him by the neck, slit his throat, and stoned him to death. Now, on Hate Group radio host Brian Fisher's program, Huckabee said this, quote, I do think President Obama has a different worldview, and I think it's in part molded out of a very different experience. Most of us grew up going to Boy Scout meetings, and, you know, our communities were filled with Rotary clubs, not madrasas. End quote. This Huckabee is turning into an absolute son of a bitch. Not a qualified or conditional son of a bitch, but an absolute son of a bitch, isn't he? He's an ordained Southern Baptist preacher. Well, there you go right there. Former governor of Arkansas, Fox News slime bag. He got himself into rhetorical trouble on Monday when on another right-wing radio show, he suggested that Obama's worldview had been warped by having grown up in Kenya under the influence of his paternal grandfather, who, according to Huckabee, had been involved in the Mau Mau revolt against the British in the 50s. Of course, Obama didn't grow up in Kenya, but that doesn't make any difference. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Right-wing politicians lie. Every goddamn one of them. Even these phony-ass Baptist preachers, they lie through their teeth. They'll lie about anything and everything. It is their nature to lie. They cannot tell the truth. That's why their phony-ass God is going to take their ass and hurl it into hell at some point, because the commandment says not to lie. It doesn't matter to these people. They use religion as a bludgeon. They do not believe any of the garbage they put out there for other people to believe. They simply do not. as evidence of how Obama's worldview had been distorted by his Mau Mau revolutionary grandfather, Huckabee cited the president's decision early in his term to return to the British embassy a bust of Winston Churchill that had been on loan in the Oval Office. Churchill was Britain's prime minister during the revolt in Kenya. Except for the fact that Obama returned the Churchill piece, which he replaced with the bust of Abraham Lincoln, all of it was a lie. Obama was in his late 20s when he first stepped foot in Kenya. He met his paternal grandfather for the first time and only time then. There's no evidence his grandfather was involved in the uprising. In reality, Obama's worldview was shaped by his maternal grandfather, Stanley Dunham, a Kansan, who served with General Patton in World War II and who was the president's primary father figure growing up in Honolulu. And Obama did spend part of his childhood overseas. His family moved to Indonesia, where his mother, an anthropologist, was doing research when he was 5 years old. He returned to Honolulu 5 years later. And on Tuesday, in an attempt to walk back his filthy Southern Baptist preacher lies, Huckabee released a statement insisting that the day before he'd meant to say Indonesia every time he said Kenya. When he said, if you think about it, his perspective is growing up in Kenya with a Kenyan father and grandfather. Their view of the Mau Mau revolution in Kenya is very different because he probably grew up hearing that the British were a bunch of imperialists and prosecutors. So every time that Huckabee used the word Kenya in that sentence, and the references to Mau Mau and the British Empire, every single time this lying bastard said it, he wants you now to believe he meant to say Indonesia. And this guy is a Baptist preacher. Keep that in mind. Keep it in mind. He is a Baptist preacher, right? A Baptist. Just for the record, the Mau Mau revolt did not occur in Indonesia. And just for the record, like the Mau Mau, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and the rest of America's revolutionaries also viewed the British as a bunch of imperialists who persecuted colonies and colonials. But Huckabee doesn't care. He's doing the race thing. He sits there with that smarmy, lard-ass look on his face, right? Mau Mau, Kenya, his grandfather's third wife, Muslim. Mau Mau against British imperialism, as if the British were ever imperialists. Everybody knows what this rat bastard is doing. Shame on you. Shame on you, Huckabee. You disgrace your God. You disgrace your avatar, Jesus. You know what Jesus would do to you, Huckabee? Pinch your head off and throw it into hell where the demons would use it as a soccer ball, along with the rest of you hypocritic swine. At age 18, Huckabee's son, David, had been fired by the scouts as the camp counselor after he and another counselor captured a stray dog, hanged the creature by his neck, slit the creature's throat, and then stoned him to death. The elder Huckabee, who was governor of Arkansas at the time, later fired a local prosecutor who had investigated the matter with the aim of filing animal cruelty charges against David Huckabee and the other boy. In the end, other than being fired by the Boy Scouts, the boys were never held accountable for killing the helpless dog. Since Mike Huckabee has chosen to spend the week smearing the president's family by criticizing his upbringing and the way it purportedly shaped his worldview, someone should ask him who warped his own son into the kind of person who would commit such a heinous and gruesome act. We'll be right back. Yeah. 21 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Mary Madden. Thank you, Mary. After the next break, podcast trivia. So prepare yourself physically and mentally, all right? Al is in Zebulon, North Carolina. Hello, Al.
Hey, Mr. Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Good.
Good.
I'd called you a number of years ago from Fort Lauderdale and then from Wilmington, and now I've moved close to Raleigh.
You get around.
Yeah, well, it hasn't always been my choice. And by the way, I am a podcast subscriber.
Bless your heart. Thank you.
So, and I have been from the get-go. excuse me. You know, when I've caught you several times over the last couple of weeks, quoting, Mario and, the thing about stopping the machine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and listening to you again tonight and, Sam Cedar, I got to thinking, well, what would it really take to shut down the machine?
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea I came up with is to shut down commercial transportation. And that is put bodies in the way of ports, shipping lanes, and just don't let them move.
You know, I think we're at a point... And I don't know, this may sound a little bit crazy, Al, but we may be at a point where the transportation industry would pause maybe because, you know, trucks and buses and trains and, you know, vehicles that travel over land are driven by people like you and me. But, you know, there is a provision, if not two or three, in the USA Patriot Act, so-called, that says action like that interferes with, I'm not quoting it directly, but I think it says interferes with interstate commerce can be considered an act of terror and will be dealt with accordingly. So I'll tell you the truth. You know, stopping the machine is key, and I do agree with that. But I've always been kind of reluctant to do what the rat bastards want you and me to do. And that is, they want to pit worker against worker. They want to pit me, a 25-cent radio talk show host, against, you know, somebody who has an equivalent income who drives a truck or drives a cab fills shelves at a grocery or works for the city collecting garbage. This is what the sons of bitches always do, Al. They try to pit worker against worker, and then they stand back like these swine that go watch a pit bull dog fight and place bets on which one of the workers is going to fall first. I hate the sons of bitches. I just do, Al. Hey, listen, I got to leave it there, pal. Thanks for checking in. I just hate that. I hate that. You know? I understand what Sam's saying. Don't get me wrong. But isn't that what they do? Huh? Who was it that infamously said, it was one of the rich bastards back at the turn of the 20th century who said he had enough money to hire half the workforce to go to war with the other half or something like that. I forget. If somebody can find that quote and email it to me, I'll do it right. I think it was, wasn't it J.P. Morgan? No? Who was it? I don't remember. I really don't. Which is not a surprise. All right, we're going to take a break here, and when we come back, hopefully we'll have somebody that wants to play podcast trivia. And if you get the correct answer, you get a 1-year subscription free to the Molloy Show podcast downloads, commercial free, has a value of $59.60. That's why we call it a two-bit radio program, because it works out to 25 cents a show. So, stick around. Oh, and don't forget, Sam Cedar's program, Majority.fm, on your friendly neighborhood computer. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
According to the...
That used to be afternoon radio music. Podcast trivia. All right. Do we have? We do. Tom, it's you again?
Yeah, finally.
Okay.
But you... guess what? I'm going to turn this one around on you. I want to buy this podcast trivia, but you have to answer my question.
No, that's not how it works. You want to play trivia? Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
I won't play trivia, but I have a question for you, though.
If you want to do that, send us send a check into the company, and we'll put one up.
I'll send you a check if you can answer the question.
Okay. We're going to do you first. All right.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Sure.
Are you listening?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich continues to tease and flirt about whether or not he will run for the Republican nomination for president in 2012. Which of the following is true about Newt Gingrich? A. He claims to be a family values advocate, but has been married three times. B. During his second marriage, he conducted an adulterous affair while simultaneously prosecuting Bill Clinton for lying about an adulterous affair. C. During his term as speaker, 84 ethics charges were filed against him. D. In 1997, the House voted overwhelmingly to censure Gingrich, including a fine of $300,000. D. In 1998, he was investigated by the IRS for violating tax laws. E. All of the above. All right, Tom, what's your answer?
E. Echo.
Oh, my God! You got it!
Okay. Can I ask you a question, a trivia question?
Not yet. Tom, you have just won. That was a tough question, wasn't it?
No.
Oh, it was.
I've got a tough one for you, though. What is me and John Boehner got alike?
What?
What does me and John Boehner have alike?
Now, are you going to answer? Wait. Hold on. Just a second, Tom. Damn it. Hold on. Are you going to answer in a manner that is, since I don't know the answer, that's going to put my broadcast license in jeopardy?
Absolutely not. I thought about this one, and I apologize for my past behavior. But this one here is well thought out.
Okay. A.
Our mother's name is alike. B. Me and John Boehner are both right-wing Republicans. C. both of us have orange faces, or D, both of us are Merlot freaks.
I guess it'd be D. All right, hold on, Tom. Kathy will... Jesus. Kathy will get the pertinent information. This hour is sponsored by Mary Madden. Thank you, Mary Madden. No message, just sponsorship. Okay, Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, and Andy in California got the right answer. It was American financier Jay Gould who said, quote, "I can hire one half of the working class to kill the other half," end quote. Jesus, God. They really respect us, don't they, these great capitalist swine? "I can hire one half of the working class to kill the other half." Sons of bitches. AJ, the Music Factory, is calling from the Catskills. Hello, AJ.
Hey, handsome. How are you tonight?
Getting by.
Well, you know, I don't like to call. I mean, I could call you every night and say, "Yep, me too, me
yeah, right.
too, me too." But I don't like to call unless I have something to say. And tonight, I got to say, I'm very angry.
Uh-oh.
And it was the liberals who did it to me today.
Oh boy, what happened?
Well, I'm going to be careful about this because I don't want to put you in a delicate position. But I was listening to a progressive talk show today.
Yeah.
And after all the talk, and you know that Secretary of State Clinton said, and that you mm-hmm. echoed tonight about the news organizations broadcasting garbage.
Right.
They had on one of the anchors from one of these so-called news organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And fawned all over this person. And instead of nailing him to the cross and saying, "Listen, when are you going to practice journalism?
Right.
We've got a serious situation in this country." They had a nice little party with this person. And it was a show I like a lot, but I have to say it was a disgusting choice.
All right, now you're saying that a so-called or alleged or maybe a real progressive radio talk show host had on a well-known TV person?
Yes.
And fawned all over this person?
Yes, they had them on for the purpose of interviewing this person and for mm-hmm. you know, for the purpose of talking about various issues. I put that in quotes. But, you know,
Did the Hillary statement come up?
No. Hmm. It's a tough choice if you said to me, you know, which one of these clowns do I hate more for being so irresponsible about something so important as journalism at such an important time in our country?
Mm-hmm.
I would have a tough time telling you which one.
I hear you.
But this one really does get under my skin. It seems like... You remember in the days of Xerox copies when you copied a copy and then it was a little more faint and then mm-hmm. you copied that copy
right.
and it was even a little more faint? And so some of these anchors have a way of getting even fainter than the one before.
Mm-hmm.
So that all of a sudden when you look at like three generations ago, that person you were cursing out, you said, they weren't so bad, not compared to this clown.
I hear you.
And so they had this, you know, a bona fide... real progressive show had on this clown,
mm-hmm.
and I was very, very disappointed. And I, you know, if they're going to cavort with the enemy, you know, to put it in a slightly melodramatic way,
mm-hmm.
well, I don't know what, you know, what hope do we have? I mean, this person really should have been called out on the carpet, or better yet, they never should have been asked on the show. I mean, would you have one of these people on the show, Mike?
No.
To what end?
Right. No, not ever. I'm glad you're not mentioning who the radio...
No, because I don't want to put you in a spot in a small community.
And I do appreciate that, but I will tell you, I will tell you that that kind of attitude is what makes me sometimes think, well, you know, you still have your liberal sympathies, Malloy, but you've gone beyond being a liberal and you're someplace else now into market socialism or democratic socialism. And the liberals are just back. And I hate to say this because I have a lot of friends who are liberals, but they don't seem to really. Sometimes they don't seem to do anything except talk a lot. And there's something about when you get in this business, there is a obviously, I'm sure it's true in the music business, too. There is a pecking order. And if you happen to get a star on your hook, you're going to be very careful not to say anything that the star might not like, because who knows, maybe someday the star will do you a huge favor. You know, this is one of the reasons I don't put politicians on, with very few exceptions. I'll put somebody like Alan Grayson on, but with very few exceptions, I stay away from that. I had too many bad experiences with Democratic Party leadership, elected leadership, when I worked at Air America, when I worked at IE America. I got to the point where I just didn't like the sons of bitches, because it started to occur to me how phony they were. And you know, you're going to find that, you've been around the bases a few times. You know what it's like in the music business. There's no difference. Trust me on this, pal. There's no difference.
Yeah. I would add to that though, and you know this to be true. I recently had this discussion with a friend of mine. As I feel like I've gone further and further to the left, I have to continually bear in mind that I don't remember ever having picked up my feet. I did not move, Mike.
That's the truth. Oh, my God.
The friggin' center moved.
Yeah.
Okay? Thanks for your good work.
All right, man.
Better dead than red.
Thanks, AJ. Take care. We'll be back after the break. Nine before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Mary Madden. Thank you, Mary. Mike is in San Diego. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Mike. It's fortuitous I speak of you on this evening of the talk of robber barons and rebellions.
Oh, yeah?
And, you know, I'm here in the land of Upton Sinclair and the IWW.
Uh-huh.
And they made their great stand against the robber barons of the era. And we're in this modern era. we have a new era, in my opinion, of robber barons, these plutocrats. We have a greed and oligarchy party and an undemocratic party, captured by corporate interests, bankrolled by Wall Streeters, an allegedly progressive administration infested with the goons like Larry Summers, the greed and oligarchy party with someone like Mike Huckabee, a sleazy Bible-banging bonehead, and whoever else that they can trot out. But I think now's the time for maybe, you know, when you speak with direct action, indirect action, aggressive resistance, passive resistance, resistance on all fronts. And I would say to people that are despairing and thinking this as a dark time, you know, if you look back in the history, the American history, many of these rebellions started in the prairie region, the great farmers' revolts, the great industrial revolts. And we are, you know, times change, Mike, and times do they not stay the same. And these times are plutocratic times. These are times of greed and rapacious men of small minds and black hearts. But remember this and do not despair, all of my brothers and sisters, as you listen on Mike's transistors. We are great and weight of many numbers, and their greed, we will draw them close to us, and we will overwhelm them with our weight of numbers, my brother.
I hope
you
so.
And Kathy are doing tremendous work. Thank you for your program. Thank you, and thank you to the sponsors for this wonderful program, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Those very nice words. I appreciate it. I hope you're right about that. I do. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Stephen is in Burbank. Hey, Stephen.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Again, more scatterbrained advice for activism.
Yeah.
I got the survey from the Democratic Party, the DCCC, and I fill it out and I send it in. I used to put a stamp on it, but not anymore. I mean, they can get all the money they want from the corporatists, you know, to run their scams. And so how much are you going to give? Zero, you know? They have 16 questions, priority issues ranking. Add your own priority. Media improvement, no more dumbing down, economic recovery, give me a break with the false dichotomy, and on and on and on it goes. And as far as being in the field, you know, I'm going to be out and around in the streets on March the 19th. And I'm going to have my little 50-milliliter gift to Sanchez, the Patron Reposado tequila that he loves so much and whatnot.
Okay.
And maybe some advice could be like this. Like, if anybody from the Andrew Breitbart crowd asks you, well, name one lie that some right-winger ever said, you know, and you can't think of anything right there at the time, just say this. Pick a number between 1 to 10. And if they pick a number, just said, well, read Bill Press Toxic Talk. It's on page 32, you know. Read Al Franken, you know, Liars and the Liars Who Tell Them, page 49. You know, just make something up on the spot. And then just add the little caveat. You know, this information that I'm telling you might be edited. And you're going to have to do your own research, because here I'm thinking, that's the answer I'm going to do. I have those books, and I don't even have the time to sit down and write about why are we dancing to their tune.
Right.
You know, why do we have to answer their questions? And you know what we can do, Mike? We
what?
Say, look, we don't want to answer your question, you know, about what we want to do. We want you to explain. And here's the bottom line right here. It's very simple. It's called homeless children, vacant housing, morality. Please explain. And we don't have to dance their tune. We just have to tell them what they are all about. And it involves activism, as usual. It involves resistance, and it involves engagement. And if we start thinking about how to counter this oppressiveness, then maybe we can pull out of it.
Well,
what do you think, boss?
I hope you're right. You know, I'm having a hard time with positive thinking lately.
I know.
I really am.
But here's what it is. We deal in facts. We deal in reality. It doesn't have anything to do with feeling or emotions. It has to do with what is happening in reality. And what is happening in reality is that we're beginning to feel the pinch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fascist takeover began, like you say, 30 years ago. I like to say it happened in 1946 when Winston Churchill gave the Iron Curtain speech.
Mm-hmm.
That was when the real push started beginning.
He gave that.
Begin.
Where did he give that? In St. Louis, I think, didn't he?
Hey, Toledo, Ohio.
Was it Toledo? Stephen, I got to go. We're out of time. Thanks, pal.
Okay, boss.
All right. Take care. Have a good weekend. Oh, my goodness. Everybody have a good weekend. Thanks a lot for hanging out tonight and this week. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, yeah. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.